Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkaran, and today I have two very special guests working on a very important project. I have with me Dr. Peter Bishop, who's professor of Sanskrit and Ancient Cultures of South Asia at Lion University, and also Dr. Yuko Yokochi, who's professor of Sanskrit literature at Kyoto University. Yes, by the power of the internet, on the same call, we have someone at Leiden, Kyoto, and myself in Toronto, and we will be speaking about both of them. We will be speaking with both of them about a very important project in the field, the Skanda Purana project. Before we dive into that, Peter and Yuko, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. So, who wants to say a bit about the Skanda Purana project? What is the aim of the project? What is it you're endeavoring to accomplish in the project?
Peter?
Yeah, maybe start. So the aim, well, there are a number of aims, but the primary aim is to, for the first time, critically edit the text of the Skanda Purana. And then right from the start, it's important to get a sense of what we mean by the Skanda Purana, because as you will know, the Skanda Purana is a very important textual tradition in India. But the text that we are concerned with is one that was for a long time unknown. It was only known from medieval sources mainly, the so-called Dharma Nibandhas, sources which collect and refer to individual Puranas. And there, when the text of the Skanda Purana was quoted, that text was not known from the published editions that we were familiar with in the 20th century. So the Venkateswara Press edition, which collected different khandas, collected different sanhitas, and published that under the name, general heading, Skanda Purana. So the text that we are concerned with is the text that was known in, according to our earliest sources, earliest quotations, and that has survived in very early Nepalese palm leaf manuscripts. And that makes it very important because that gives us suddenly access to an early form of the Purana, much earlier than many of the other Puranas that we are familiar with. In fact, I think I'm right to say that one of the manuscripts that we use, which is S1, we call it S1, dates to 810 of the Common Era, and that makes it the earliest dated Purana manuscript in existence.
Fascinating.
So what we aim, very briefly, is to critically edit the text for the first time, and it's not only an edition, it's also a full study which accompanies it, because you cannot edit a text unless you also understand it, unless you understand where it comes from, what the authors aspired to do. And so it comes with an extensive study, synopsis, accompanying studies.
So very recently, just a month ago, in fact, there was published the latest installment of this of this project, the fifth installment, featuring certain adhyayas of the Skanda Purana. That work has been made available open access. We will put it into, we will put the link into the podcast notes, so anybody listening can actually take a look at that and read through the detailed synopsis. And if you're a Sanskritist, take a look at the reconstituted text, the fabric of the Skanda Purana, or at least those adhyayas thereof. Now, this is a term that's important to unpack. Many scholars, for example, my master's was in the Valmiki Ramayana. So, of course, I instinctively turned to the critically edited text, now fully published by the Goldman Translation Project, similarly with the Mahabharata. Yet, to get to the critically edited text takes a phenomenal amount of work. Could you explain to people, what is this creating a critical edition? What do you start with? What is that process like?
I think you should start with
what you mean for the process.
So for those who don't understand what a critical edition is, Yuko, you're so in it, you've internalized it as a way of life. But for those who are like the Skanda Purana, where is that text? Where can I find that text? And people may not understand, there really is no go-to text. And so what are you working with and how are you working with it?
Actually, for me too, this text, the Skanda Purana, is for me the first experience of editing the text. So in that way, also very important for me too, personally. And so the first, of course, we have the several manuscripts. Yeah, collecting all the manuscripts. Yeah, we can't know it all, but as much as possible. And then we will read, of course, read the manuscript and collect it. And what is important and also the very useful, I mean, for the editors, in case of the Skanda Purana, the recension is very clearly divided. I mean, we call the Nepalese recension or S recension, consisting with three old Nepalese manuscripts. They are very old, from 9th to 10th century. Maybe one is 11, but around that. And then the other manuscript is very late. It's clearly very late. It's one is dated at the end of the 17th century, 18th century, I forgot, Revakanda, 17th century. And the other recension we call the Ambika Kanda, is the seven manuscripts, and they are the 19th, or maybe oldest is 18th century, and the new one is the 20th century. So these make one group. So usually, for example, in the Mahabharata or Ramayana, so this dividing the recension, I mean the grouping the manuscripts, it's sometimes very difficult because it's usually each manuscript has contaminated during the transmission. So usually there are regional recensions. We can say the South Indian recension or the North Indian recension or East Indian recension and so on. But some manuscripts are contaminated to each other. And then it's very difficult to divide. But in case of the Skanda Purana, we can clearly divide the manuscript into these basically three recensions. And so that means we can trace the development of the text. I mean the transmission of the text. How it is what is the early form? And then how it is changed in this case, only we have a manuscript in the eastern region, so around Bengal. And then in late medieval time, how it is changed and what this new element is added. And then in the current form, what is, what part is corrupt and what is a new addition and so on. So that is a good. So not only what is reconstruct the older form, that's also the very important, but still, in addition, we can trace how the Purana is revised and added new materials and so on. So how it is changed and how it is living in a way. Yeah.
Yes. So for those listening to just get a sense, these brave scholars start off with a number of manuscripts, which they have to make sense of, and they discern different recensions. And so there's a process whereby they will reconstitute a critical edition, which, if I'm understanding correctly, is considered to be the most recent ancestor of all of the extant manuscripts. But in addition to the critical edition, you're also mapping the ways in which the historical processes whereby the Purana has adapted in the intervening centuries.
Yeah, I think, if I may follow up, I think Yuko was making an important point there, which is important to stress because that is often forgotten. And certainly if you think about the parallels of the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, where scholars have a tendency to accept the constituted text of the Mahabharata or the Ramayana by the critical edition as kind of the original or basic text. And we are trying to do something different because by analyzing the different recensions, we try to really put into focus the changes of the text. The text is not a fixed phenomenon. The text is in process. That is precisely what makes Puranas fascinating because they are indeed, well, I call them living texts. They are in a constant process. They are important for communities. And because we have these groups of texts from different time periods, as Yuko made clear, from the 9th century onwards, all the way up to the 19th century, so that's 1,000 years. And we also have it from different regions. So that allows us to get insight into these changes that the text is undergoing. And the text is not just one text, yet the text exists in all its various manifestations. And we really want to make that the goal of our critical edition, to make that emphatic. And maybe one last point about that is also, if you look at our edition, the way it appears, you will also see that we try to represent that because you have different layers in the apparatus, which allow you to see the different recensions, so that if you are interested in a particular form of the text, you can actually find it in the apparatus.
I think that's a really important point, insofar as you take the effort and time to preserve the dynamism, to preserve the ways in which the Purana may be, as for example, you may study in a traditional lineage. You have a teacher where you're learning a text on the tongue. Say, for example, many current paramparas will transmit, for example, the Guru Gita, right? And upon memorizing 100 to 200 verses, the end of it is Itishri Skanda Purana Uttarakhande. You know, this is found in the Skanda Purana, in the Uttarakhanda. We don't know if it's there, but the tradition preserves it as such. Mm-hmm. And that's one way in which it lives. And what you're showing is the way in which it has lived traditionally, historically, in these various manuscript variations and recensions. You're preserving the dynamism of how the Purana has arrive to us in modern day.
Well, we're showing it and preserving it, but of course the ultimate goal is also to study it, to try to account for the changes. Why did certain people, composers, transmitters, however you want to call them, feel the need to change it? And it shows that a Purana is not just some relic from the past, but it has a real important force in
it's living. It's living.
Also, the in many other Puranas, already the Hatra pointed out that is the extant Purana is different from the same name Purana, for example, the quoted in the early Dharmanibbanda literature. So, but because most of the Purana has only a new manuscript, new means, for example, after 15th century, but in our text, the very fortunately, we have a very old manuscript and also the new manuscript. So we think now the this text was revised very largely before the 12th century. I mean, before Dharmanibbanda works, quotes from that. So maybe around the 10th century. So that usually is, I think it occurs in many Puranic texts. But because we have only the manuscript after that, so we can't follow it. But in this case, fortunately, we can trace it, how it is changed. One of the examples of the in the recent publication, this volume 5, the last chapter, that is largely revised in the earlier Nepalese recension. And the later, this we call Reva and Ambika recensions, they have three very different texts. Very different, mainly the same, but it's increased much,
So there's a couple different directions. So how long have you been at this project? And how much of it would you say is completed? Just to give people a sense of the labor involved in this.
For a start, we didn't start it. Yeah, so it was conceived originally by a different group of editors, as you can see if you look at Volume 1. Volume 1 has as names of editors Hans Bakker, Harunaga Isaacson, and Rob Adriansen. So they started it at the University of Groningen at the time. It was published in 1998. So that's by now 23 years ago.
I joined it just before that, 1996 or 97, 96 maybe. A student.
So Yuko's name is already there in the preface. I was still a student at the time. So as such, it has gone through different. Different people have been involved. So now it's handed. It's in the hands of Yuko and me. As main editors, it is as such very much teamwork. It involves coming together, preparing different parts, reading them together, discussing them together, not only between Yuko and me, but also affiliated scholars who have an interest in it. And where we are, I think with volume 4, we reached the middle, more or less the middle of the text. Volume 5 takes us across the middle. So we are now, more than halfway. And we've made a rough plan on the future volumes, what they will contain. And we expect, Yuko, correct me if I'm wrong, 4 more volumes to come.
Yes, But of course, if we want to increase the volume number, we can do, because the volume, now we are working on volume 6. In the last part, it's the later recensions revise the text very much, so it increase. About 3 times or 4 times or sometimes 5 times. So that part is very difficult for us to edit.
It depends on the edition of the page. But overall, our minimum, the minimum number of volumes would be 4 more to go.
So certainly not for the instant gratification crowd, this work. It's a patient and perseverant work indeed.
It's very satisfying, because if you look at each individual volume, you will see, and we've also tried to do that in producing individual volumes, they have a certain coherence. Yeah, there are certain aspects that are treated in the text. So it basically gets you through, Hindu mythology at large. Each volume also brings with it its own questions and ideas. So we try to also explore that aside from simply editing the text.
So then, with respect to this recent fifth volume, say a bit about your findings or the ideas or what you're advancing in that volume in terms of study.
Well, the first thing, if you just look at it at the basics, so volumes 4 and 5, I would put together. That takes us into incorporation of Vishnu's mythology. That is a kind of underlying subject in this part of the text. And it's very fascinating because, as such, it's one thing that we should have said from the start about the Skanda Purana. The Skanda Purana is a text that is heavily Shaiva. So that means its ideology, its theology relates around the figure of Shiva. Shiva is the Ishvara, the Lord of the universe, wedded to his wife Parvati. They are the divine couple. So it's a Shaiva text in that sense. The Skanda Purana covers much more. And so the part that we are working on at the moment and in the previous volumes is roughly about the incorporation of Vishnu's mythology. So volume 4 told the myth cycle of Narasimha. Volume 5, the most recent one, that of Varaha, who is interestingly called Naravaraha. So there's also an attempt to connect the different manifestations of Vishnu. And the next volume will also deal with Vamana.
It's a very important cultural, sociocultural, historical process that you're being given access to through these manuscripts of the Skanda Purana. So there should be there's a lot of fascinating material there, and there's no doubt it'll be the basis of some very important scholarship. I can't help myself, because it's near and dear to my heart. I want to note that Dr. Yokochi has actually looked at has used the Skanda Purana project findings for research into the Devi Mahatmya, and she has a couple important studies on the Devi Mahatmya. I'm currently preparing Oxford Bibliography's Hinduism entry on the Devi Mahatmya, and there's some seminal studies. Do you want to say just a quick word about how you use this project to understand the Devi Mahatmya?
Yes, that is in a way my beginning for working on the Skanda Purana, and before starting. Working on the Skanda Purana, I studied Devi Mahatmya for my MA, master thesis. And then I wanted to study the history leading to the composition of the Devi Mahatmya, so the prehistory of the Devi Mahatmya. But actually, there is not much material, just a few verses in the Harivansha. And also there are a lot of what is images of the Mahishasura Mardini, of course. But the Sanskrit text is really very scanty. And then I come to Groningen, and Hans Becker told me, you should read it. And then I read it. This is a material I wanted, because it is clearly the earlier than the Devi Mahatmya. So now I think the Devi Mahatmya is one of the main source. The Skanda Purana. Skanda Purana was one of the main source of the Devi Mahatmya. Once I talked in one of the World Sanskrit Conference, but as usual, I have not made a paper.
It's fascinating work. It's illumined the world behind the text. That's very important. Peter, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, whatever you'd like to share about your own research in general, or your backstory. You know, Puranas are about backstories, so tell us a bit about your entry into this world, if you will.
Yeah, well, my research from the start has been on the Skanda Purana, because that's basically where I was taught, and it was the project which was happening at the time. So my initial work, my PhD, was on the list of sacred places that is found in one of the chapters, chapter 167, which is a very important chapter that gives us a lot of detailed insight into Shaiva topography. Yeah, so it's more or less a description of the Indian subcontinent in relation to places sacred to Shiva. So that was my starting point. But at the same time, I've also always had an interest in the Pashupatas. The Pashupata tradition is clearly very much present in the Skanda Purana. So I also have I've been working quite a bit on the Pashupata Sutra and the Panchartha Bhasha, the commentary by Kandinya on that, which is as such much more about ascetic traditions, ascetic worship of Shiva. And then most recently, or in recent years, I've also started working on another text that for long was forgotten, and it has been very important in medieval India, the Shiva Dharma, the Shiva Dharma Shastra in particular. So that is a manual of Shiva worship. It's effectively a manual about Linga worship. Most of it is about the worship of Linga. But it is a text that is slightly difficult to kind of pin down. It's not a Purana. It's not a Kavya. It is a manual of Shiva worship. It's not a Tantra either. But a very influential text. Yeah. So if you look at the number of manuscripts also surviving, it's very impressive. So I started working on that. And for that, I published, 2-3 years ago, a book called Universal Shaivism, which includes an edition and a translation and study of one chapter, which is a invocation of all the gods. For Shanti, for peace, for pacification of the kingdom. And all these gods are devoted to Shiva. That's also why I refer to it as universal Shaivism, because not only we human beings are supposed to be devoted to Shiva, but the same applies to the gods as well. And the sages, of course. And the rivers and the mountains.
Om Namah Shivaya. That's really good for existing or prospective grad students out there. How might one get into this work of dealing with critical editions? What might you recommend to them
for graduate students? Well, we one thing that is has been attractive, I think, about the Skanda Purana project is that, in fact, several graduate students have been involved. So also different dissertations have been produced in the process. Mine, of course, was a part of it as well. But this year, we had a defense here in Leiden of my former student, Sanna Dr. Mers, precisely about this incorporation of Vishnu's mythology into the text. And then we also our seminars typically are open, so we get requests from doctoral students to attend, and we welcome them, and we have our workshops. Yuko and I have our meetings ideally twice a year, and then we meet for 1 or 2 weeks on a daily basis, reading the text, going through it verse by verse, and attending that. That is, I think, the best training ground. I think in general, really what also makes this project very alive and kind of inspiring is reading together. Yeah, you cannot do this kind of thing on your own. That is maybe my advice. Don't read these things on your own. Go and talk with people, read text together, try to figure it out together. Yeah. I learn every day from reading, reading it and discussing it with others.
I'll have to take you up on that, Peter, and you can help me read through some of these texts at some point. That's great. Okay. That's great. I guess as difficult as it is to date these texts, few would be better poised than you to do so. How would you, according to our current knowledge, date the Skanda Purana?
You go as the authority on that.
Oh, sorry, would you repeat it?
I realize that it might be ambiguous, but you would know best. How would we date the Skanda Purana currently?
Yeah, that for that I have argued much about the introduction to volume 3, and now I think between 550 to 650.
Yeah, but important there already is, of course, we started by saying that there are different forms. The text has gone through different phases.
Yes,
so
yes.
What is your question about? That would be the first thing to ask. Yeah, are you interested in the very first form of the text? Because in fact, yeah, the argument is that it continues over time.
Yeah, so
it starts
so
more
first form, I mean the first reduction probably in 6th to 7th century, maybe from the middle of 6th century to the middle of the 7th century, and then the major revision, rather the much revision, is made around that's not so clear, but maybe 9th to 10th century, because before the Dharmanibbanda also like Lakshmidhara quote from it. They quoted from the revised text. So at that time, the many parts increased actually. And then after that also some additions and so on is added.
So maybe important to mention also is that the main text, so that you find on the printed page and our main focus, because we have to have a focus on what we are editing. That is the what we think is the more or less earliest form of the text. Yeah, so the text is printed, that's roughly 6th, 7th century is our assumption.
Yeah. What I want to say, in general, for the constituted text of the edition, for Skanda Purana, also in the Mahabharata or Ramayana, I want to say that this constituted text is just a hypothesis of the editors. But often the readers who are not so accustomed in editing the text think this is what is a fixed text. Yeah. But it's not. It's just the hypothesis of the editors. So each reader can try to constitute it by themselves using these apparatus, critical apparatus, variant readings, and so on.
That's a really important point. Peter wonderfully problematized the question of what is the date of the Skanda Purana by which Skanda Purana? What do you mean by the Skanda Purana? What are you talking about? It's a process. This is an important point that the critical edition is no doubt an important tool, one arrived at a great deal of labor and patience and training. Nevertheless, it's a hypothesis, not a conclusion.
And if we can get one new manuscript, maybe very old, 10th century manuscript from Kashmir, then everything is changed.
Or a time machine, but then you'd reshuffle the deck based on that manuscript. Fantastic. Was there anything else about the Skanda Purana project or critical editions that you wanted to share before we close for today?
One small point, but as Peter said, this has very old manuscript, 9th, 10th century manuscript. And it is the oldest manuscript of the Purana, but also for the epics. For Mahabharata and Ramayana, I think the oldest is around the 11th or 12th century. So in that way, in the grammatical sense, for the so-called epic Sanskrit or vernacular Sanskrit, yeah, we have good evidence, yeah, for that, because we have old manuscript, and clearly in the later manuscript, it is more what is usually it is changed to conform to the Panini grammar. So the point we have old manuscript is not only for the this Skanda Purana itself, but also the for the all the epic and Puranic studies, some contributions. Yeah,
yeah, it's about the Sanskrit, and I think in that respect also, I mean, our work is also in line with some other work that is happening, for example, in relation to Shaiva Tantras. You can see the same phenomenon that, based on earlier manuscripts, it turns out that many texts in an earlier form had less Paninian correct Sanskrit. And what you see that over time is that these texts tend to be corrected and to be normalized, you could say. And so we are, because of the, let's say, 20th century or 19th century editions, we're accustomed to these normalized forms of the text that are, as Yuko says, very often based on rather late manuscript traditions. And now that we have access to these earlier manuscripts, we can, get in that respect also closer to lived Sanskrit again, getting back to lived traditions, to that Sanskrit is not just a fossilized Paninian type of tradition, but that there are varieties of Sanskrit and in that respect, it also, yeah, a lot of the our work also relates to studying the type of Sanskrit in which the authors composed the text.
Your work in many ways serves as an important peephole into ancient India, and there's relatively few clear. It's murky, right? So to find an old manuscript that evidences style, that evidences content, I mean, that's pretty much you win the lottery when you're studying ancient India to find some material culture so pristine.
Yeah, especially in the case of Puranas, because Puranas are so by definition, and also as works, they try to hide their historicity. Yeah, it's all attributed to Vyasa. There's no kind of clear basis. So the moment that you have, as we have, a more kind of, at least we have a fixed point with this one manuscript, with these early manuscripts, you can at least be sure that by that time, this was the form that the text had. But in relation to that, so what we've also been trying to do, and Yuko also alluded to that in terms of dating, is to connect the text to material culture. For example, also our latest volume, in fact, we get also into the iconography of Varaha. And Yuko has done the same about Devi, the form of Mahishasura Mardini in the text, and how that relates to the telling of the narrative. And from my side, of course, I already started right from the beginning with this topography, the places mentioned. And then from there also, it becomes a stepping point to other studies, so to individual places and to the different religious communities that were there. So the more you do this, you come to realize that the constitution of a text that we do is all dependent upon all those aspects. Yeah, you cannot just do a study of a text like this in isolation, just deal with the manuscripts. That's not possible. It involves all these perspectives.
That's an important point, and fascinating indeed to think about the web of subfields implicated.
May I add one?
Of course,
yeah,
of course.
One of the important points is that this text, this Skanda Purana, includes a lot of Mahatmya type text. It's not that independent Mahatmya, but a small Mahatmya, but there are many. And I think this is the earliest text that include, earliest Purana that include many Mahatmya type texts inside. Yeah, of course, Mahabharata has many, several Tirthayatra sections, but it is a pilgrimage. And it's not the Mahatmya of the fix of a certain place. So in that way, it is this Purana is, in a way, the precursor of the later development of the Mahatmya in the Puranic genre.
That's super fascinating.
Study become very important.
It's super fascinating, as you both well know. There's the Devi Mahatmya is in the Markandeya, and there is a Surya glorification that parallels it, the Surya Mahatmya, for lack of a better term. And it is fascinating because it seems to me that maybe the ancient Saura redactors or composers, they took their lead from the Devi Mahatmya to rework some of those narratives of the sun. So it might be interesting to see if there are aspects of the Mahatmyas of the Skanda Purana that we see in these Mahatmyas. That might be a fascinating line of questioning.
Yeah, I think Yuko's point was mainly about the geographical types of Mahatmyas, about particular places and the rather detailed information that at times we get about these places, so rivers, mountains, names of lingas, potential temples, and then to also indeed what we try to do is to connected to epigraphy, see if there are inscriptional references to it. So although, Puranas are typically identified as somehow kind of mythological works in some time zone out there, it's actually possible, the Skanda Purana really makes it possible to connect it to particular places. And you see indeed this development of pilgrimage and narratives of sacred sites, etc. And there are a lot of very fascinating narratives. Anyway, the other thing, of course, it's a wonderful text. It's really well, at least, of course, we're biased, but it is written in a very lively manner with intricate dialogues and kind of battles and conversations between sages and in a very lively style, I would say. Yeah. So it's also just
that probably is a good point that the Purana is great storytelling. Indeed. Fascinating. All right, so we've taken enough of your time for today. I imagine you're both quite busy. So I want to thank you both for appearing on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your invitation.
You're most welcome. For those of you listening, once again, we've been speaking with Dr. Peter Bishop of Leiden University and Dr. Yuko Yokochi of Kyoto University on their joint monumental project, the Skanda Purana Project. You will have a link in the podcast notes to the project, to their most recent open access publication pertaining to the project. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, keep listening, keep reading, and keep contemplating the dynamism of Purana. Take care.